welcome to, well, the last episode of this season. Oh, don't start crying, Johnny. I can tell you're upset.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Oh, don't sound too upset now.
No, I've got over it.
Well, this is going to be our, like I said, our last episode for a little while.
Yes, we're taking a little bit of a sabbatical, just for a couple of weeks, a few weeks, and we'll be back, and we'll be putting out a couple of specials in the interim, so we'll not be totally gone.
So you won't miss us?
Not much.
Not much. Maybe our listeners are quite relieved. We're finally shut up.
Yeah, I think so. But we'll be back. It's not so much a promise, more a threat.
Good idea. Make a threat, we'll be back. But I thought we were going to go out with a bang today. What about that?
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
And we have some stories about a bang, about explosions.
Ah, I see what you did there again. You're always on it. You're always on it. Organising. That's your thing, isn't it?
Well, I've been researching explosives recently.
And yikes.
No need to worry. It's for the book I'm writing.
Ah.
I need to know about explosives and how they behave, you know,
right, okay.
As you do.
Yeah. This is the same book. This is the book, isn't it? This is the book we've alluded to earlier on in the series, isn't it?
Yes.
No one comes out alive.
Some do. The dog does, definitely.
Yeah, good.
And the main character does.
Yeah.
But there's not much hope for some of the others.
Well, that's what they're there for. They're expendable,
exactly.
Thing. Expendable.
Expendables, yeah. Exactly.
Can you claim expenses on that?
What, on what?
Expendable characters.
I give up. And today we have again two short stories plus one extract from a book.
Mm.
And again, like I said, you know, they all feature explosions.
Ooh. Boom.
So, Johnny, tell me, have you ever been in a bomb scare?
I have been in a bomb scare, and with this accent, it might surprise you, but it's true. Throughout the 70s and 80s, they used to happen all the time. In fact, my very first job, I worked as a civil servant, and it was almost like Dad's army, because it was before they had sophisticated means of dealing with these things. And I remember being in a very old-fashioned office, and it was all sort of sellotape on the windows and stuff like that. And we were frequently, the alarm went off, and we all had to go out and stand in the street. So, yeah, I have been, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I'm at work, and I'm not telling you where I work.
Mm.
We've had bomb scares.
Yeah.
And we were actually doing a bomb scare, evacuated to the petrol station. Seriously, I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
And you know who I work for, so that's a joke.
Yeah.
But but yeah, we were like bomb scare, panic, which turned out to be just a bag of carrots or something. And yeah, you were like, get out, you know, kind of thing.
Well, visions of you all sort of huddled together in the petrol station and all the people sort of sparking up a fag and stuff like that, you know, just to make... Just to make it perfect.
Get the matches out.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, the guy who evacuated us, he was more worried about my car, because he said, your car is near the bomb, can you just move it? Because, like, you know, I've got this little old sports car, convertible.
Yeah.
And he was quite... He said, it's a really nice car, can you just move
it? Well, no, I can see, you just could have picked it up and tossed it in the back seat, hopped in and moved off a bit, couldn't you?
Well, yeah. But yeah, a bomb scare at the petrol station, that was an interesting experience.
Yes. Yeah, take me back. We had tons of them back in the day. God, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. Have you ever been in an earthquake?
No, I don't want to be in an earthquake.
Oh, that is quite, scary that is.
I'd be terrified.
Yeah, we had one in Alaska, and I think it was about 4.8 only. You know, it's not like a major earthquake.
Yeah, it's not a biggie.
No, but that was something. Just how the earth, you know, just shakes underneath.
Yeah, I've heard, you know, people have been saying how scary they are. And we do get them here occasionally, don't we? You know, little 3.8s and 2.4s, and they sort of damage a China dog on top of somebody's TV. But, the full, you see videos of the full works with the whole building shaking, you go, Christ,
yeah.
It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, we had one here in the UK, and actually you hear it come towards you, a bit like a roll of thunder.
Mm.
You hear it come towards you, and then go underneath you and go away. And the cat just looked up and he thought, well, never mind, and went back to sleep. But anyway, back to business of stories.
Mm.
Today we've got two extracts two short stories plus one extract from a book. And they're all to do with explosions.
Right.
And the first one is by Rachel Caldicott. And that's the book extract. And the book is called The Panopticon Experiment.
Sounds intriguing.
And Rachel says that it's a fast-paced and thought-provoking young adult adventure story set in the future where animals are equal to humans. And most, but not all humans, can communicate telepathically with them.
Right.
I have to say, it's very, very good.
Okay,
you know,
it's good.
It's got a message and it's got the... It's a very unusual book.
Mm.
I really enjoyed beta reading it. And that one, I sometimes forgot I was supposed to beta read. And I just read away and I thought, oh, I'm supposed to make comments here.
Now, that is a good sign. That is a good sign.
And it's very interesting. It's about this girl called Flo, and she battles against an organisation called the Human Supremacy League.
Mm.
And that organisation is just hell-bent on reasserting human dominance in the world, because at the moment, sort of, animals are more in charge.
Touch of Orwell, then.
And Flo, she's got three friends, and one of them is a snow leopard. And that's called, the snow leopard is called Lance. And it's a lovely little character, Lance. He's just so nice.
Great.
And the three of them, they uncover a sinister plot to destroy the gene which actually enables telepathy.
Right. Well, you obviously very much enjoyed it, reading it, B. So shall we hear the extract?
Yeah, let's do that then, shall we? The Panopticon Experiment by Rachel Caldicott. New Era, London, February. After hearing rumours of upcoming civil unrest, Flo went to the balcony to search the streets below for Lance. He should be back from hunting by now. Instead, only a trolley car lumbered past. It halted a few minutes to let some passengers off at the corner. On the other side of the street, a tired-looking delivery dog plodded by, large panniers strapped to his back, probably at the end of his shift and keen to get home. Sounds of giggling children drifted upwards. Flo smiled. She recognised most of them from her building and knew their mothers would be keen to get them in for dinner, bath and bed. But the children had other ideas and gathered around the hot chestnut man, shamelessly begging for free nuts. From the corner of her eye, Flo glimpsed a quick movement at one of the windows opposite. She looked across, but whatever it was had gone. It was probably someone else looking out for a loved one, or perhaps a trick of the light, or most likely her worry-fueled imagination running riot. Human supremacist rallies had broken out across pan-Europe, and Flo supposed it was only a matter of time before the same thing happened here. Odd, though, that particular apartment was normally empty. Anyway, where was Lance? Just then, she caught the sight of him, with his distinctive four-legged lope, running towards the building. She lifted her arms to wave. At that moment, an enormous explosion rocked the balcony and she was thrown backwards. Simultaneously, a huge orange and black fireball surged up from the street. The heavy boom of the blast reverberated between the buildings. For a moment it seemed as if the very air boiled in anger and the world spun out of control. She was vaguely aware of the windows shattering before she landed hard and laid stunned and winded, gasping for breath. A split second later, from the streets below, the screaming started. White dust rained down on Flo's face, mingling with the black smoke, drying her throat and making her cough. Her breath came stuttering back and she rolled over painfully. Scrambling to her knees, she crawled back to the balustrade, hauled herself gingerly up and peered over. A worrying network of cracks had appeared in the stonework, but she had to risk it. The hot chestnut man lay on the ground, both legs bleeding. Nearby, a woman sat on the curb, her arms clutched around her stomach. Was that blood? The trolley car had been blown over and the horse lay, screaming, still harnessed to the load while the passengers crawled shocked and bleeding from the wreckage. Flo reeled, feeling the horse's pain and fear directly in her head. Then she glimpsed a young girl staggering through the debris calling for her mother. A fleeting, sharp stab of a memory, triggered by the child's cries, stole Flo's breath again. But where was Lance? Still hoarse, she leaned out as far as she dared and tried shouting his name. For one brief, horrible moment, she thought she saw him, an immobile pile of grey fur, but it was the delivery dog. She spared a quick thought for him and his family, but her friend Lance, the beautiful snow leopard who shared her life, was still out there somewhere, and maybe he was her too.
And that was the opening extract of The Panopticon Experiment by Rachel Caldicott. And if you'd like to check that out in full, we've put a link to the Amazon site in the show notes. So please go there and get the book.
And you know, I think we need to go straight to the next one.
Yes, we do. Let's go.
And the next one is called Bang, funny enough, by James Marinero.
Right.
And James writes techno thrillers, which have a lot of sort of bit of geopolitics thrown in.
Right.
But he also writes short stories, and some of them are based on real events. And he's actually living on his boat, the lucky man.
Yeah, fabulous.
And he's at the moment sailing slowly around the world and currently in New Zealand.
Yeah, well,
and he's been there hiding away from, you know, things.
Good place to be on a boat at the moment with this pandemic still raging around the globe, isn't it?
Yeah, go hide away.
Hmm, definitely.
And apparently he's writing two novels at the moment. Ah. So he's got two works in progress.
Wow, busy boy.
And would you like to read that for us, Johnny?
I will read that for you.
Go. Go then. Read.
I'm going. Right, pray silence. Bang, by James Marinero. They were cylindrical, each about 20 centimetres long and 4 centimetres in diameter. 8 sticks with rounded ends. They were lying in a stainless steel container, and through the glass top, I could see they were brown in colour. The casing was hot to touch, and I could hear a faint crackling sound. I knew that the sticks were undergoing internal chemical changes as I watched. There was also a distinctive odour, certainly not unpleasant. Nearby, a timer was audibly ticking down, and I could see on the dial there were about 10 minutes left to run. Anticipation was high, and it was hot in the room. Should I or shouldn't I? Was it too soon? Gently, I removed the lid of the container. The noise increased in intensity. Taking a metal implement in my other hand, I examined each cylinder, moving them gently. The noise became even more intense. I quickly replaced the lid and stood back, considering the contents of the vessel. They had been manufactured in a factory. Some saltpeter had been added to the raw ingredients, and other chemical stabilizers had been included also. The basic product was available in a range of sizes, and the raw material was also available in bulk form, which could be shaped by hand. Users could combine them with other materials for other effects, and to avoid danger to the public, it was necessary to transport and store them at low temperatures. The British Army used them in large quantities. 8 minutes to go. I wasn't sure if it was too risky to remove them before the counter reached zero and save time, as I knew it might result in casualties. Behind me, the other people in the room were getting restless. It had been a long, hot day, and I was still dressed in shorts and a T-shirt. Not the most appropriate dress, and certainly not what professionals would be wearing for the task at hand. I washed and dried my hands and returned to the work area. "How much longer?" someone called. "Less than 3 minutes," I replied. I picked up a knife and wondered about the next step. Bitter experience had taught me that care was necessary now, but impatience of the others was getting to me and my stress was increasing. I didn't want to harm anyone. Despite my better judgment, I removed the lid of the containment vessel and gently prodded one of the cylinders. There was a loud bang. I felt hot fluid sear my right arm and splatter across my face. Intestinal membrane had burst and I had caught the blast. Fortunately, I was wearing spectacles, otherwise I might have damaged my eyesight. My swearing was profuse and colourful. The others all laughed. "Are you all right, dear?" my wife asked. "No, I'm not, and you can cook the bloody pork sausages yourself next time."
And that was Bang by James Marinero. And you said pray silence, and that was what I was doing. I was praying while you read that.
What, did I get through it?
Yes. That you wouldn't mess up.
Oh, ye of little faith.
And that means we're coming to the final story.
Oh, no. And they said we could never do it. Well, they said we could never do it, but we did it anyway. But
we did
know.
It anyway, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. Okay, and what have we got? What have we got?
The last one is called Terror, and it's by Nina again.
Oh, Nina, right. Yeah, she.
I remember she was the one that wrote about the garden.
Yes, with, yes.
The
yes.
snails.
Oh, yes.
So this one is
Cedric
rather a bit... Cedric. This is rather a bit different from right. Cedric and Esther. It's rather a bit more serious. This is about Lara, who's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine a bomb has just gone off in a restaurant. She's a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
A bomb has just gone off in a restaurant, and it literally starts the moment when everything settles and the dust settles. And everybody tries to gather themselves and realise what's happened.
Sounds pretty gripping. Shall we hear it?
Go for it. I'll read that then, so you can pray in the meantime.
Okay,
that
I will.
Finish eventually.
I'll pray Lara makes it. Knowing you, you know. Let's hope so.
Well, it's Nina's story, so.
Yeah, oh, right, Nina, well.
They probably live.
Okay.
Live to eat letters.
Oh, you're lovely, okay. Oh, let's hear that then.
Terror by Nina. Lara wobbles towards me through the devastation, past upside-down tables, past toppled chairs. She nearly slips on a menu card. Her forehead is covered in blood. So are my hands. I drop the order pad and begin to panic. I touch my belly. My baby. I can't feel my baby kick. Oh, God. Lara reaches out and grabs both of my shoulders. Her lips move, but my ears are still ringing. She shouts,
"Unrest too."
What? She shakes me.
"Andy, I said, put him in tree."
A second explosion. Some other building, God knows where, but close enough for the shockwave to thunder through us. We duck, arms around each other. Outside, people are screaming. Silence inside. I scan the damage caused by the first explosion. Our explosion. The entire front of the Happy Diner is missing. Gone. Ripped up. Punters and all. Lara and I are the only people upright. Blood. Miranda. God, where's Miranda? Last time I saw her, she was taking payment from a guest. I stagger a few steps, aiming for the bar. No idea why. Glass crunches underfoot. Shards of plates. Body parts. Sick. Bile. Vile. My belly is sore. My baby. Good God. Lara shakes me again. Oh, God, my baby. Then Lara gives me a slap. Hey, my boss has just hit me. Now she's shouting. Sandy, look at me. Sandy, focus! My ears have cleared at last. More voices in the street blending into the screaming of the sirens. I can only make out a few words. Terrorists! Run! They're shooting! They're coming! I have to get out of here. My baby has to get out of here. Hide! Then Lara pulls me by my wrist. Sandy, help me! We have to put him on the trolley. She points to a man lying by my feet. Hurry up, Sandy! He's alive! We can't leave him behind. They're coming. They'll kill him. I hadn't noticed him. His face is charred, but I recognise his coat. A moment ago, he was sitting at the table near the window, handing Miranda his credit card, and now he's here near the bar. Something is embedded in his lower abdomen. A piece of the window? He's soaked in blood. I can't see Miranda anywhere, missing from her spot. A yellow shoe, nearby, hers. The left one. There's a foot in it. No sign of the rest of her. Her other shoe is next to me, on the bar, foot inside too. Oh, God, Miranda. And fire. I'm sure I can smell something burning somewhere. I have to get out of here. But Lara yanks me back. No, Sandy, don't. It's not safe outside. Active shooters will hide in the big fridge. The room-sized industrial fridge our chef is so proud of. The steel doors will protect us from the shooters. Now come on, Sandy. Help me load this guy on the trolley. We just about manage to flop the guy over the heavy-duty catering trolley. He ends up belly up across it, arms, legs dangling, blood dripping. The gunshots outside are getting closer. They must be at the flower shop next door. We have no time to hide. Let's go! We push the trolley through the rubble towards the kitchen. We'll be safe in there. We reach the fridge just as the gunfire bursts into the restaurant.
Wow, that was Terror by Nina. And gosh, I hope they all get out of that. That's a gripping ending, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit. I hope they survived.
Let's hope so. And talking of survival, this is it then for the end of series one.
Do you know, I really enjoyed this. I have really enjoyed doing this.
Me too. It's been great fun.
Yeah, and so much so we need to do it again.
We will be doing it again. So, you know, everybody out there, dry your tears. We will be back. You know, which is taking a couple of weeks to recharge our batteries. But in the meantime, of course, we'll be putting out a couple of specials. And listen out for them. There'll be one probably next week, and then a gap of a week, and then another one.
Yes, and well, thank you for listening to us and sticking with us and putting up with our ramblings.
Yeah, and I can see, I was wondering why Shirty Bloke was looking happy today, but I think he knows we're shipping out. You know,
he's probably glad we're going, you know. At last.
Look at that grin he's got on.
All he had is water, isn't it?
Yeah, 12 weeks and all he's had is 12 lattes out of us, you know, so he's not going to get rich on that.
Well, he should have served cake. They would have, you know, ordered more.
He should have done. And, you know, I think we need to, you know, you need to have a word with him going out today. Saying we will be back, you know, threaten him, tell him we will be back. But he needs to get, you know, Plenty of sponge cake in there.
Yes, no, chocolate cake. We still haven't settled that one.
No, we haven't. Well, we could eat... Of course, one of the Litopians came up with a great idea, didn't they? They said, well, you could have...
No, that was my sister.
Oh, your sister was... I'm sorry.
Yeah, I should say eat both.
Eat both, well, you know, and there it was. You know, that's a simple remedy.
Simple solution.
Simple solution, that's right. Well, now then, so... Well,
then we're going to go and skip into the sunset for a while.
I think so. We'll skip into the sunset, but we'll be back. And
see you soon.
Yeah, see you soon. Oh, Alexa's getting in.
Alexa's coming with us,
yeah. Yeah, see you soon. And have a good couple of weeks.
Weeks?
Not years, no. Couple of weeks.
Not years. No. Just a few weeks.
Just a few weeks. And here comes the music. So for the last time in this series, bye.
Bye.